and welcome back to Off the Beaten Path. My name is Stan Deaton with the Georgia Historical Society, and we welcome you to this podcast for the week of December 5th, 2018. If you've ever been to Savannah, chances are you visited one of our city's historic cemeteries. They're an important and beautiful part of Savannah's historic fabric that many people make it a point to visit while they're here, especially Bonaventure Cemetery and Colonial Park Cemetery downtown. Today, as our guest on the podcast, we're talking to the man who is responsible for these cultural and historical assets. Sam Beetler is the Cemetery Conservation Coordinator for the City of Savannah, and this week he talks about his job, what he does, how he got it, and what it's like to work in these hauntingly beautiful places every day. This interview was recorded in Sam's office at Laurel Grove North Cemetery in Savannah on December 4th, 2018. I hope you enjoy it. Sam Beetler, welcome to Off the Deaton Path. We are out here in your office at Laurel Grove Cemetery, and I guess technically this is called Laurel Grove North, where we are.
Yes.
That's the first question I'll ask you, to explain the difference between Laurel Grove North and South.
So a little bit of background is Laurel Grove opened in 1852, and when it opened, it was one cemetery. Traditionally, it was divided. You had a white section of the cemetery, and then you had a black section of the cemetery, which is a little bit smaller. And then I believe in the 60s, is they came in and they put I-16 through the middle of the cemetery. And then that officially divided the cemetery into the north half, which was the white section, and then the black half, which is Laurel Grove South.
And so it remains that, basically.
Yes.
So they literally put I-16 right through the middle. Is it a flyover or the on-ramp?
Yeah, the on-ramp for I-16.
Goes right through the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow. All right, let me back up. Sam is the Cemetery Conservation Coordinator for the City of Savannah. What does a Cemetery Conservation Coordinator do?
Cemetery Conservation Coordinator does lots of things, but the main job is I'm the head of taking care of the monuments in the cemeteries. That ranges from the actual work that we do, which is resetting headstones, forming masonry work, doing iron work, whether it's resetting iron fences, doing painting of fences. Sometimes we do a little bit of welding work for damaged things like that. And we do a little bit of wood carpentry work for cemetery signs, a lot of the maintenance stuff. But mainly we repair headstones.
So you oversee the cemeteries in the city of Savannah that the city owns, and I'll come back to that in a second. I should say that one of the reasons we're doing this is because the cemeteries in Savannah are really an integral part of the historic fabric of the city. They are destinations for people who come here. They are almost like urban parks in the sense that they're refuges, I guess, from the city. They're places of, not to sound too cliche, but they're really places of haunting beauty when you come out here. Tell us how many cemeteries the city owns and what they are.
Savannah owns 5 cemeteries. Let's see if we can start from the oldest and work our way up. The oldest cemetery is Colonial Park Cemetery, which is downtown. It opened in 1733.
Which I think was originally known as Christchurch Burial Ground, I believe.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And that cemetery was open until around the 1850s. And when that cemetery opened, Laurel Grove opened. Laurel Grove opened in 1852. It was designed as a rural cemetery. It's kind of on the cusp of a rural cemetery. Very opposite of colonial era cemetery. The colonial cemetery is very, very compact, very symmetrical, and then Laurel Grove has a lot of meandering, whimsical roads. It has lots of vegetation and trees, and it has lots of places for people to come in and spend time with their ancestors. And then when we talked about in the 60s, you know, Laurel Grove became two cemeteries. So that's where you get the two cemeteries from, Laurel Grove North and then Laurel Grove South. Bonaventure, I'm trying to remember, I can't remember the dates off the top of my head with those, but Bonaventure originally was owned by the Mulrins. And then...
As a plantation.
As a plantation. Right. And then the Tatnalls at one time purchased that. And then from the Tatnalls, Peter Wiltberger actually purchased property from the Tatnalls to start his own private cemetery, which was Evergreen Cemetery. And then I believe in the early 1900s is when it became Bonaventure. Like the city ended up buying it and taking over the property, and it became Bonaventure, and then it became the day. And then our last one is Greenwich Cemetery, which is originally was considered to be a Bonaventure extension. Mm-hmm. So it's actually behind Bonaventure. I believe the city acquired it in the 1930s, like the early 1930s, which was also a plantation.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one that extends all the way out to the river.
Correct.
If you're out there, it's sort of to the left
correct.
Of Bonaventure. Okay,
there's,
sure.
There's another, so you have Bonaventure in the front when you come in the entrance. You take the road to the back. There's a private cemetery, Forest Lawn. But you keep going on the same road. Eventually, you get back to the Greenwich Cemetery.
To Greenwich, okay. So then the cemeteries that I'm familiar with also in town are not city-owned. And I know there's a Jewish cemetery that is walled off. I know the original Jewish cemetery, there's a monument there on Oglethorpe and Bull. But there's a Jewish cemetery that's walled off. I guess you need keys to get into. Mm-hmm. There's a Catholic cemetery. Both of those are private.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What are some of the other cemeteries in town that people may think the city owns that don't? What are some of the other prominent cemeteries? Or are there any?
One of the main ones that a lot of people call in about is Oak Grove.
Oak Grove, right.
And largely because they're having issues with the owners of that or not taking care of it. So a lot of people call in and ask about that.
Mm-hmm.
There is LePageville Cemetery, which is off of, I believe it's President. You know that Waffle House is out there on President?
Right.
There's a cemetery behind that that was part of the community. It was part of, I believe, the Shield Builder community mm-hmm. that was back there. They did mm-hmm. a lot of work there. The last time I went to see it, though, it was really, they had an arch and they have informational kind of commemorative plaque out there, but there's not much left of that cemetery. There's some smaller ones. There was at one time, there was a smaller one down on the south side, way past Montgomery Crossroads, Densler Cemetery is a small one. And then you have other smaller cemeteries throughout Savannah.
So what we now know as Colonial Park Cemetery is the oldest burial ground in Savannah. But what are the oldest tombstones in there? Do we know? Were there burials in Savannah at other places before that one?
The one that really sticks out to my mind because it has, I believe it has a connection with a lot of the slave burials in Laurel Grove South is you have the old Negro burial grounds, which is right around where the Massey School's at now,
mm-hmm.
Around in there and like in that area, and you have a lot of other cemeteries in the squares. I apologize, I'm not.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I was going to ask you if that's true. I've heard that as the city developed southward
mm-hmm.
and laid out squares, mm-hmm. that there were some displaced cemeteries, whether they were African-American or slave cemeteries. So is there some truth to that, that there were?
Absolutely.
And were they just tombstones knocked down, or were graves exhumed and people moved?
From the information I've heard is that they tried to move everybody that they could. It's very similar with when they put I-16 through Laurel Grove. I've never seen any actual record of people that were moved from that location because where they put the highway through, there were burials there. But we don't have, I mean, I've been here for 6 years and I've never seen any information of who was buried there, who was removed, and where they were moved to. But they say that they moved everybody.
We just don't know where.
No, we don't know where.
Wow, that's interesting. Let me back up just for a moment. And give our listeners a little background on you. You have a master of, well, first let me start. You have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in sculpture.
Yes.
From Kent State University in Kent, Ohio, and a Master of Fine Arts in Historic Preservation from SCAD right here in town. And you have, and I know from looking at your resume, that you've done a lot of professional development work in things like plaster repair, stone conservation, monument repair, ornamental iron workshops. So these are the kind of things really that you do in your job as cemetery conservation officer for the city. How many people work for the Department of Cemeteries in the city besides you?
I think it's roughly between 12 to 15 people. It fluctuates a lot, so my number's a bit fuzzy.
And is your work more of a skilled craftsman than most people who work in the Department of Cemeteries? Were you specifically hired to do conservation work on stonework and on ironwork?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me how you got this job and what you like about it.
What
you don't like about it.
I did an internship with the department in 2011. At the time, the city, every summer, they would offer two paid internships to work under the conservation crew. So we'd come in and, the coordinator at the time would set the projects and I'd work with the technician and we would reset headstones and paint fences and reset, like, lots of resetting of really small concrete markers. And that's how I got into it. And then I had actually left town and started working with the Park Service, and then one of the positions opened for the tech position, and I applied and I came back. I got in. The thing that I really love about this job is the challenge, because with conservation is that there's never a straight answer for anything, and there's so many different ways to actually look at solving that problem. For example, it's like you have a headstone, say it's broken in half. It looks exactly like a headstone next to it, but there's so many different variables. When you would think about putting that back together, you have to think about all of that. Some of the things that I don't like about the position, it's not really, it's like any other job. It's like you come in, it's like there's things, there's always, you're always going to have an issue with a budget wherever you go. You're always going to have an issue, finding help at times. But like that, to me, it comes with, any other job. Like to me, I get to come and work in the cemetery where I get to see all this beautiful vegetation and landscaping. And, I get to work outside a large majority of the time. So I don't have much to complain about.
And I can't resist saying it. You work in this place and you have all these people under you, but nobody listens.
Right, right.
And what was the other one you mentioned?
Oh.
They don't talk back either.
They don't talk back, and I try not to box myself in.
Right, yeah. yes, right. We couldn't resist. So when you take me through a typical day. I mean, when you come in here, do you just start walking around and see what needs doing after a heavy thunderstorm comes through, or is there a punch list of things that you know that are just ongoing projects?
It's a little bit of both, but you're right. When a large storm comes through, that is the first thing that we do, is like, because I am the main person over here in Laurel Grove, is me and another one of the service coordinators. We usually do a drive through the cemetery to see if there's any down limbs or anything that's damaged. And over at Bonaventure, that's where our pretty much all of our maintenance crew is they do the same thing over at Bonaventure and over at Greenwich. And then we're in charge of opening my crew is in charge of opening three cemetery gates. So we do Laurel Grove North, Laurel Grove South, and then we do Colonial. But Colonial is pretty easy to, do a walkthrough because it's small in comparison to the rest of our cemeteries. Mm-hmm. So we'll do that. But like a normal day to day is, depends on how in-depth you want me to go. So the way that we determine the work that we do is based off of our set priorities, which generally is around the condition of a monument. How bad is it? Is it in relationship to, is it possibly going to fail tomorrow? How bad it is. and safety. And when looking at those two as our main priorities, we'll come up with a system where we'll do like a numerical evaluation to come up with what that gets us a smaller number of monuments and lots that we want to evaluate. And then we'll, me and our technician, once we get that group of monuments, then we go back in and then we'll do a individual assessments on those monuments. But the tape, another step back, when we work on projects, we'll work on projects a lot at a time. And for the conservation work we do, we only work on abandoned lots. So a lot has to have been abandoned by a family for 70 years, which means no interments, no work permits, no landscaping, like no contact from the family for 70 years. So when we're doing like, we assess everything, we see, so everything that is in poor condition, we know about it and we have it on our radar, but we can't necessarily work on it. Those other lots that we can't work on, what we end up doing is we make an attempt to reach out to the family to try and get them involved, you know, to take care of what's on the lot.
So these lots out here that you can see even right here through the window, people, you walk out there, you when you say you don't maintain, you cut the grass and all that, and you keep them maintained, but you can't go on to
right.
a plot owned by a family that's still in contact and repair things.
Right.
Is it their expense when that happens, or is it the city's expense?
It's when something's damaged on a private lot, it would be the family's expense to take care of it.
And if they choose not to, it just remains damaged?
Right. It depends, because if something's a really big safety hazard, we can step in, but we, you know, you have to go, because we're a municipal cemetery, you have to go through a certain procedure of, you know, reaching out to them and trying to make contact. And in particular, with a lot of the lots that you don't know who the family is you have to, you know, you have to put an ad in the newspaper, you have to, you know, do your due diligence to make every attempt to reach out to the family. And then once that happens, then you can come in and, you know, you can make a repair.
So Did you got your undergraduate degree in sculpting or sculpture?
Yes.
So I have to ask, what were your plans then as a young man? What you wanted to do with that? Is this sort of the fulfillment of that?
It's such a strange coincidence how this has all worked out. So I graduated with a sculpture degree. I wanted to make art, but I didn't really have a lot of direction for how I was going to do that. And my high school art teacher, Tadaki Hata, who's also like an Olympic wrestling coach.
Coincidence.
Right?
Yeah.
But he's Japanese, and I had asked him about studying art in Japan. He actually got me a job teaching English, and I was supposed to study stone sculpting. Long and short is that didn't work out. So I was like, okay, I came back and was trying to figure out what I was wanting to do. So I ended up going back to school for historic preservation because I was really interested in, you know, the idea of preserving places, to preserving heritage as a means to, you know, enriching like our culture as a whole, as a people. It's like having that connection with the past and with like the tangible objects. Creates a sense of, you know, a pride and involvement and attachment to a community in one way or another. So I had the sculpture and I had the historic preservation, and then I just happened upon this position too, which was an interesting coincidence because I had this sort of involvement in Japan with the stone sculpting of just, it kind of didn't work out. And then I recently got the that stone conservation position, and it's kind of like I've always been walking in this kind of circle and not really knowing it, because here every day it's like I work on sculptures, but it's in a completely different, you know, aspect, which to me is also, it's just as fulfilling because I'm using my hands, I'm still using the know-how and the knowledge of like one of the largest parts of being trained as an artist is you're training your eye to be able to look at things visually, and whether or not, you know, something is visually, like, composition-wise, are you looking at it that it works? You know, it makes sense. It's pleasing to the eye. And you have to be able to see that, particularly when you're putting a headstone back together. As do these P2 pieces line up properly? Is it tilted right? Or, you know, is this masonry, is it finished a proper way? Does it go back together the way that it originally did? And that can be a really big challenge. And then, like, having the sculpture and the historic preservation has really, really been beneficial for that.
Do you, outside of this job, do you create art?
I do.
Sculpture? Or what medium do you work?
For the past couple of years, I've just been doing a lot of drawings. I draw houses for people. And I've recently started working with plaster. I like the idea of using plaster and lath as a sculptural medium. I don't want to talk too much about it because I'm just starting with that, but I did have a piece in a show recently last month at Sulphur Studios in town, which was pretty successful.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So this seems like, I mean, just sitting here in your office right now, we're the only ones in here. I haven't seen anybody else out of the cemetery. Is this job as solitary as it seems? And if it is, do you like that?
I would love to have more people working and doing conservation, because
I mean, we're surrounded by thousands of people.
I know. I'll recruit all of them. It's like, you want your lot work done, you got to do it yourself. I'll show you how to do it.
It never works.
Just come on up. No, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So the city funds a coordinator position, which is my position, and they fund one tech. We unfortunately have had a hiring freeze since this summer, and my tech, she left in July, and we've just been, you know, doing what we can since then. But on top of that, we also have money that we hire. We also work with a contractor. So I have a contractor that's working on our larger projects because they're able to get, you know, enough people to come in and do projects like our mausoleums, you know, in an amount of time that's just not feasible for one person out there by themselves every day doing that work. So on top of, like, our in-house work that we do, it's like, I'm also in charge of that contract as well.
And you work for all of the cemeteries, not just here at Laurel Grove. You're moving around a lot. These are all still active cemeteries other than Colonial Park. Is that true?
Correct.
So people are still actively being buried out here. Mm-hmm.
Laurel Grove North gets, right now, it's around a dozen burials a year. Laurel Grove South, I think, gets a little bit more than that. Greenwich and Bonaventure get burials all the time.
And burial out here at Laurel Grove, is that in family plots, or are there actually still plots being sold to people here?
No. Greenwich Cemetery is the only cemetery where we sell lots still.
Okay.
It was either last year or the year before that Bonaventure finally sold out of all their spaces.
So they're sold out of Bonaventure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They are.
If you're not in already, you're not getting in. No. You mentioned locking up. You lock up these cemeteries and open them. You lock them up every night and open them every morning.
I open them in the morning, and then other employees in the cemetery open them or close them at night.
Do people get locked in these cemeteries?
Yeah, they do. So the procedure is, you know, like, the gates close at 5:00. So usually 5:00, we'll dummy lock the gate, or we'll lock the gate, and then someone drives around and they look for people in the cemetery, and then Sometimes you miss people, and also sometimes people are actively avoiding the people trying to get everybody out because they want to spend time in the cemetery.
That was my next question. Do people sometimes actively try to spend the night here, or at least stay until it gets dark?
I don't know of anybody ever wanting to spend the night in the cemetery, but I can't put it past anybody at this point.
So I have to ask the obvious questions that I'm sure you get asked as part of the hazards of your profession, but do you ever see anything that has caused you to go, out here? Strange sightings or things go missing, but when there's no two-legged people around, that sort of thing?
I can't say that I've seen anything, you know, that's really stood out of just like, that should have never happened, you know.
You've never seen apparitions or hooded figures or cloaked figures?
I have not. I've always been open to the possibility of seeing ghosts.
That was my next question.
But it's like I'm in the cemetery every day, and you know, I've never experienced anything like that. You know, like every once in a while, like you think you see something on the corner of your eye, and you look, and you don't see anything, and that's
it. What is it that you think draws people out here to these places? I mean, traditionally, cemeteries were graveyards. They were places to deposit dead bodies. And mm-hmm. historically, those were attached to churches or someplace like that. Not a lot of funereal art. In the 19th century, particularly in the Victorian era, we saw the transition to the rural cemetery movement, which are places where the living and the dead can commune, mm-hmm. either through nature or through the artwork, mm-hmm. or both. Nowadays, I think we see in a lot of cemeteries and places, there's everything's flat. It's all about economy, being able to cut the grass. Monuments cost money. Mm-hmm. What is it that you think makes these places so unique, so popular, places that people keep coming back to? In places like Savannah, where the past is very much a part of the present and such a large part of our economy.
That's a good question. And there's so many different answers for that. One off the bat is its beauty. There are few places, in a lot of, not particularly Savannah, but a lot of places, there's few places where you have this deliberately designed landscape. You have these different trees, you have the different plants, and you can come in and you can experience that. And on top of that, you have a lot of these very beautiful monuments that, you know, a craftsman came in and they made these. So you have all these little tiny works of art all throughout the cemetery. And people, they really want to come in and they want to see that. And it's not something that you get to see every day. A lot of people aren't going. I feel like best way to say this. A lot of people don't experience going to art museums. And even when you are in an art museum, it's like you still have a very small, you can have a small space, or you only have a certain amount of collection that's out for people to see at one time. When you come in the cemetery, you have all this artwork that you could see at once. And then you have another layer on top of that is every single artwork, piece of artwork out here is actually, it is a memorial to a person, which tells a story. So you can get involved on that level of just looking at who this person was, what were they doing, how are they related to such and such. And then you get the more famous people, you know, like in Laurel Grove, you have is where our large Confederate soldier burials are at. So a lot of people come in there because they're interested in the Civil War. They want to know about the Civil War. A lot of generals are buried here. And then our most famous burial, in one of our most famous burials, is Julia Gordon Lowe. She's buried here in Laurel Grove North. The amount of Girl Scouts that come in here throughout the year is they'll fill up the cemetery. So you have Julia Gordon Lowe, and then you have Johnny Mercer on the other end of town in Bonaventure. Those are probably our two most famous burials out of the five cemeteries I own, and people come to see them all the time. And you know,
there's a lot of tours that come through here, I know too, right?
Absolutely. Majority of the tours go through Bonaventure. Mm-hmm. Bonaventure got really popular when Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil came out. Mm-hmm. And that would probably be, if you add the Bird Girl with the statue, that would probably be the most wanted to see statue in the cemeteries. But it's not there anymore.
Right, it got moved.
It's been quite a while since the family moved the statue off the lot because they were getting so much foot traffic on their family lot. And from what I've been told, is people were starting to, you know, vandalize it.
Chip away parts of it.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
What about, speaking of Bonaventure, I believe that's where the statue of Gracie is. How did that statue become so popular? How did that grave become
so popular? I think it's the story that people tell. That's another one. So it's like that. You add that to the top of the list is the story is that when she died, no, I think it was this. She was fairly popular as a child, and when she died, they had this stunning statue made of her that was carved by John Walls, who is really the prominent stone carver in Savannah. Mm. He has carvings throughout all of the cemeteries. But they tell the story, a lot of the tour guides tell the story that when the, I think it's, I could be completely telling the story wrong, so I'll just put that there. But when the mother saw the statue that was carved, it was such a likeness that she fainted. And she never wanted to see it again. She never wanted to come out to the cemetery, and they actually ended up leaving Savannah.
Really?
Eventually. I don't know if that is because of this, leaving Savannah is because of the statue, or because of the loss of their daughter, or what. But they've created this mysterious, mm-hmm. you know, story. Whether what parts of it are true, I can't say for certain. It's not something that I've researched.
And all of these cemeteries have these wonderful little stories. I mean, mm-hmm. you will see plots of children's graves who look like they all died in an epidemic or at a hospital somewhere. Mm-hmm. I know in Colonial Park Cemetery, this is one of the questions that I get asked as a historian, and I've heard an answer, and I'll let you answer it. Why are there tombstones lined up along the wall in Colonial Park Cemetery?
I've heard the story that it's in connection with the Union soldiers staying in the cemetery. And there's stories that they kicked open the vaults to sleep in them to stay warm, and they knocked over a lot of the headstones. And when they cleaned up the cemetery, they put a lot of them on the back wall
because they didn't know exactly what graves,
right?
Because
they didn't know where they're supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
I unfortunately can't say for certain that that's what happened to the headstones. Mm-hmm. That's the story that I've heard,
right?
Because you know they also tell the story that you know the soldiers also defaced a lot of the graves, which if you look in the right place, that's true, because I've seen a lot of them, some people being 1,700 years old or something strange like that.
Right, yeah. They altered the dates.
Mm-hmm. But whether or not that it was at a later date in good intentions of like a group of people coming in and cleaning up the cemetery and they didn't know what to do with the headstones and so mm-hmm. they put them on the wall, I can't say for certain.
How many people are buried out here at Laurel Grove? This is a question you must get, and I'm sure it's an estimate.
And that's a question that I can't really answer. So you have, let me see, you got the map right here. You have about 3,000 lots. Each lot has 12 spaces, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that alone, let's do some math here. 3,000 times 12. So that's 36,000 graves.
Mm-hmm.
But that also doesn't include, like, everybody that's buried in the Gettysburg lot, the Confederate soldier lot. And also we have multiple strangers' grounds. We have an infant section. We have a baby land. We have a Jewish strangers' ground and a Gentile section, which are very, very large sections. And, you know, I've heard stories that they would bury people 2, 3, 4 times over in these sections in the past, which...
Are these unmarked?
The majority of them are unmarked at this mm-hmm. time. You know, back then, they would use a lot of wooden markers.
True.
And they just don't hold up over time.
So they're not necessarily pauper's graves. They were just opened up and put into the ground with no marker. The
right.
Markers have just disappeared.
The stranger's ground was... like our pauper's grave, they mm-hmm. just call it the stranger's ground,
mm-hmm.
In which that over time it became less of a stranger's ground and more of like I needed a single burial. It was used, and then mysteriously, then a headstone would show up on the lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is there's probably well in excess of 36,000 people buried out here.
I would say there's at least 50,000 people out here. This cemetery is about 65 acres.
And does that include Laurel Grove South?
No, as well? Laurel Grove South is about 90 acres. And when this was one cemetery, it was by far the largest cemetery in Savannah.
Mm-hmm. It probably has. How many does Laurel Grove South have? Do you know?
I have no idea.
But probably that many again.
Oh, I would say there's well beyond that in
mm-hmm.
South.
Mm-hmm. Which is where Mr. Law is buried there, I believe. W.W. Law is buried there. You mentioned...
He did a lot of work in Laurel Grove South, particularly in the 90s before he passed away. He was a really big proponent of that cemetery and doing a lot of the preservation work. He's the one that got y'all's plaque out there, too.
Yes, yes, the historical marker.
Which is interesting because you see pictures of it. It used to be on the outside of the cemetery, and sometime in between that, it got moved to the inside of the cemetery. Mm. Be interested to know.
I don't know the story behind that.
Right?
Interesting.
I don't think we'll ever find out what that answer is.
So you mentioned the artist, the sculptor, who's responsible for a lot of the sculpture work, I guess, that we see in these cemeteries. Is there anybody still contemporarily working on cemetery sculpture? Do people still get buried here or in Laurel or in Bonaventure that they still put sculpture over their graves?
Not like that.
Not
like that. You see people do elaborate monuments. So a little bit of history is that so the John Walls had a stone yard, which was purchased by Little. I can't remember his first name. Which has a connection to Oglethorpe, marble and granite. Which is run by Dan and Virginia Mobley. Virginia Mobley's father, I believe, is the one that purchased it. So there's a connection to the John Wall Stone Yard through the Oglethorpe Company because they acquired the rights and they're the ones that have been, they've had this interesting lineage throughout time as they've been doing a lot of the monuments. The one that I know off the top of my head is Oglethorpe did, is they're the ones that did the Button Gwinnett Monument in Colonial Park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're the company that did that. And they still install headstones, you know, in our cemeteries and pretty much throughout the region. They do a lot of work.
Savannah has had two hurricanes that came through in the last couple of years, in 2016 mm-hmm. and 2017, and Matthew and Irma. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that those presented? First of all, everybody in town always prepares, right? You evacuate, you batten down the hatches. What does the city do in its cemeteries, if anything, to prepare for hurricanes and hurricane winds? Is there anything you can do?
First thing we do is we secure our buildings. That includes turning off the power, covering up all of our equipment inside of the buildings, and putting up storm boards. So we put up plywood boards on all of our windows for all of the buildings we have on property. We do a check. We go through a checklist for all of our equipment. We make sure that all of our equipment is running the way it's supposed to and that it's fueled and that we have fuel for it. The cemetery department also maintains emergency trailers that has extra equipment and supplies and tools. So it can be moved around to different sites as needed. And just getting in contact with FEMA, talking about things, you know, making sure that our employees are taken care of because we're also, I'm unsure on the status of it now, but we've always been considered emergency response in the past where it's critical workforce. You have to go to a shelter and you stay there. And as soon as the storm is over, you immediately would come back and start cleaning up.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's changed to, you know, we would come back in, but we would just start working on cemeteries. For Matthew, that's what happened is we left for the amount of time. And as soon as we got the call, we came back in and then we started cleaning up the cemeteries, which we had a very, very large amount of trees down. We had...
Because we're surrounded by live oak trees. I mean, these
mm-hmm.
towering over us right here as we speak, and all those cemeteries.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of live oaks, a lot of magnolias, and a lot of cedars. That's where we had a lot of our damage from.
Did you have trees and limbs, or just mostly limbs?
Limbs, trees, and everything in between.
Smashing monuments and stones. And.
Mm-hmm. I wish I would have known. I could have pulled the numbers up for that. But we didn't finish doing the paperwork for that. Like, we finished the projects in the spring of this year, 2 years after Matthew Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And we just finished the paperwork up in the summer. We had assessed hundreds of lots. We had over, at the end, we probably had around 100 lots that were damaged. We ended up doing work on about 30 of them that were abandoned. And that was in combination with our in-house crew and our contractors doing work.
So you have to be an arborist as well. You cut trees and limbs and pull things out of the way.
For like the immediate cleanup, yes. But for a lot of the larger stuff, like say a headstone's fallen, a tree's fallen a lot and it's knocked over a bunch of headstones, we do what we can. But a lot of that ends up getting contracted out because we can do the immediate removal. But the larger trees that were damaged actually ended up being taken care of by a private contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was taken care of by FEMA, so it had to be done a certain way. FEMA had to come in, they had to assess what needed to be taken out. So FEMA would tell us everything. It's like, that tree can be removed, this is what can be removed, and this is what we're compensating you for. So every single thing had to be approved by FEMA. So when we did assess, after we were able to get in the cemetery and we were beginning to remove trees, then we were able to really come in and start evaluating the monuments. And evaluating the monuments, it's the same exact thing. Because it was declared an official disaster, FEMA had to come in and inspect everything. So we would assess all the damaged monuments in the cemeteries, create a spreadsheet, and then you have to come back and do a walkthrough with FEMA and explain to them exactly what you need to do, because a large amount of the work that needed to be done had to have an archaeologist to do the digging. If you were going to expand beyond the original footprint of the monument, or you had to do something underground, an archaeologist had to be on site to be able to properly, excavate and evaluate what we were removing in the event, because we're in a cemetery, in the event that we dig something up, or more specifically, we dig someone up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I presume you had to work with Park and Tree as well, because don't they have jurisdiction over all these trees, or do they not?
They do. Well, no, I can't say that they do. So we have a maintenance supervisor that oversees the cemeteries. In the past, when we had a larger crew, we had our own tree crew that would come in and they would maintain. They would do all the pruning. They would do all the assessments. They would take care of all the trees. Then 2008 hit and everything changed. So The larger trees and the more complicated stuff gets taken care of by Park and Tree, but that really doesn't happen until after, like, we've looked at it and go, hey, we have a problem. We need to call Park and Tree to come and take care of it. If it's something small, it's something that we do. I mean, we've got a chainsaw sitting right there underneath the desk.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned digging someone up as one of the hazards of doing work out here. I know that your work as a conservation coordinator is mainly the work above ground. But I would ask you, do you ever have occasion to be somewhat of an undertaker? Do you ever get below ground? Do you go into the tombs? Do you have experience with some of the residents here at Laurel Grove?
I have a couple of stories. So when you work for this department, you're mandatory on call. So being on call for the cemetery is all the weekend services, you participate in that. Before I was a coordinator, I was a tech. So being a tech, you actually are the ones that cover the graves. You'll come in, you'll help with the service. The family comes in, usually with their pastor. They do the small, the small service, and then you get the shovel and you fill the hole in. Since I've moved on to coordinator, I don't really do that. I do more of the take care of the setup for the service, get the paperwork, do the diagrams, make sure that this that end's ready to go for the maintenance guys or the burial crew to come in and take care of that. Doing conservation, you have to do, foundations are really big part of resetting monuments. And so you have to be very careful, particularly when you're digging, because you know, you'll find someone. There's one instance where, you know, we were resetting a headstone and you get a foot below grade and there's someone's head. And in that instance, you stop work. You can't do anything. You have to call people in to get, you know, like to evaluate, to assess what's going on. And unfortunately, you know, that sometimes happens. Like, you have to call the archaeologist. You have to have someone come in and do that. One story in particular is when we were taking care of a project for Matthew. So we'd already gone through all the assessments. We already started doing it. And so we had the female archaeologists there. In South, we had a tree fall right through an above-ground fault. It was a pretty common practice in the past, particularly in Laurel Grove South, is then they would have these above-ground vaults. An above-ground vault is basically a cast concrete box with a lid on top. That they would sit the concrete box just to grade, and they would put the lid on top. So the lid would be exposed. It would right at grade. It would only sit about 4 or 5 inches above the ground. Well, darn tree fell right through the middle of one and completely destroyed it. When it hit, it heaved the whole entire vault up. So we had to get, with the archaeologist, we had to get the backhoe, we had to move the whole entire lid, we had to, and then we had to move the whole entire vault back into position with the coffin right there, reset everything, keep him in one piece, and then once that was done, you know, put the lid back together and then put the lid back on top.
That's pretty delicate.
You know, and it's great to have, you know, have the archaeologists there, because they can evaluate and determine, you know, what the best course of action is with that.
So if you put a spade in the ground and something is exposed, you don't call the forensics of police, you call an archaeologist.
Well, it depends. Because, like, I mean, it's always questionable, because if you have any instance you think something's new or like that, yes, you're going to call the police. That's usually the first thing you do, is you call the police, and then they come out and they evaluate, is it human, is it an animal, is it new, is it old, what is it? And then if that's what happens, then usually at that point we don't necessarily need to call an archaeologist or dig for that. But an instance where we had another one where we had a sinkhole in a lot in Laurel Grove North, where we had to fill in this hole, and we had to evaluate some things because we had the sinkhole, but there's a storm drain that ran right underneath that lot. So to be able to do the work on that, we had to know where everyone was at. So we called the archaeologists, they come in, they systematically dig down, and you find these really interesting metal coffins. So we know where it's at, we know where everyone's at, they're accounted for, and then we continue on with the project.
Interesting. Yeah. So these are the hazards of the job. So I have to ask, when you tell people what you do, or you're in a place, not at a conference, not at a grave association conference or a cemetery association conference, but if you're just out in the world and people say, hey, Sam, what do? You have fun with this and telling people that you're over all the cemeteries in Savannah?
I do.
Well, it's an unusual job.
I try and gauge the conversation as I try to, you know, I'd like to be modest about it. I just, you know, I'd say I fix headstones at the cemetery. And usually that opens the whole conversation, and it can go pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, it goes into the supernatural. Do you ever see any ghosts? Do you ever dig anybody up? And, you know, sometimes it goes into more of the technical. It's like, you know, what's some of the coolest headstones or projects that you've worked on?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You never left here and felt like there was anybody sitting beside you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Oh, one other question I wanted to ask you. Does anybody ever leave here? Are they ever disinterred? Is anybody ever taken from here and reburied somewhere else? Or does anybody come in here who was not buried here originally, who's been disinterred from, say, New Orleans or from some other place, and a family wants to bring them here?
Yes.
A former spouse or a child somewhere?
Well, we do have, like, with our cremation, like cremains, that happens quite often where someone will ship us someone.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, you know, it's like we already are in contact with the funeral home and with the family. Basically, the owner gives permission, they sign the paperwork, they pick the space, and then they can send it to us. And then we'll put them in the ground. That's a pretty easy one, as long as you have a certificate of cremains that says, this is officially this person, holding the box. Mm-hmm. But people have been moved to other places. People have been dug up and moved out of here. Basically, when you do a disinterment, again, that is something that is done by permission from the lot owner, or like an official granting authority, which would be a, you know, like a child of the lot owner, say, if they're deceased, and with a funeral home. So you have a funeral home, like the director, someone from the funeral home comes and they pretty much oversee the whole entire thing. We come out, we diagram the lot, we determine where they're at, and then they're the ones that take it from there. It's someone that has an official title, so the burden of responsibility is not held on the city. It's more of, you know, the funeral home, because they're the ones that were overseeing the project, and they have the necessary permits and, you know, licenses to be able to do that.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. Sam Beatler is the Cemetery Conservation Coordinator for the City of Savannah. You are an integral part of the historic fabric of this city and the beauty that is our city cemeteries and the historic places that people come to enjoy, to commune both with the dead and with nature. And I appreciate what you do for the city and for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you.
And that concludes our interview with Sam Beatler, the Cemetery Conservation Coordinator for the City of Savannah. The interview was conducted at Laurel Grove North Cemetery in Savannah on December 4th, 2018. The hardest working engineer in show business, now the czar of our Tallahassee office, as well as the captain of the GHS under 40 soccer team, is our very own Brendan Cannonball Crellin. Our mailman this week and every week is Crimson Tide fan extraordinaire, gloating over his SEC championship, one Gary F. Taylor, born and raised, that's right, who is away this week attending the Mattoon Bagel Fest in Mattoon, Illinois, but he promises to be back next week. Our legal counsel this week and every week is provided by the law offices of Gallipo and Taylor, where their motto is, "You only feel guilty." Catering this week provided by Hagee's House of Tacos, home of Big Al's Half-Baked, Francis Drake, Circumnavigate, lead singer for Whitesnake, San Francisco Earthquake, Patty Cake, Don't Confuse It With Steak, Grab the Emergency Break, Oh for Heaven's Sake, Don't Eat It By Mistake, Drippy Enchilada. If you have an iPhone, you can find our podcast at the App Store or on the podcast app on your phone. If you have an Android, look for us at Google Play. Tell your friends and family, because you should never suffer through this by yourself. You can find out everything about the Georgia Historical Society at georgiahistory.com and the Georgia History Festival at georgiahistoryfestival.org. Please also check out my blog and similarly hauntingly beautiful podcast at deatonpath.georgiahistory.com. If you have any comments about this show and how much you enjoyed it, or about life in general, drop me a line at sdeaton@georgiahistory.com. And as always, thank you so much for listening. We hope you'll come back next week. So long, everybody.